Tyler Adams, thanks for being with us, man. I really appreciate you coming on in what is unprecedented and really hectic times.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Tell us what's life like in Germany right now. I mean, obviously, wherever you're watching this from or listening to, you have your own little bubble, and we all want to know what it's like in other places. I'm in Los Angeles, and things are hectic. It kind of feels like a ghost town. What's life like for you?
Yeah, it's a bit of the same. Obviously, it's a unique and, like you said, unprecedented time. But I think we're all figuring out as we go how to kind of cope with this situation. So for myself, obviously, the biggest thing is life without football. You know, you have to find ways to occupy yourself throughout the day, deal with boredom and all the stuff like that. So for me, I like to just wake up in the morning right now and you know, plan my day throughout the day and then just, you know, go with the flow.
Before we get into what you're actually doing right now to stay in shape, Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, and yourself have teamed up. It's feedingamerica.org. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we put our heads together and we kind of came together and, you know, we don't want to say we're the core of anything, but we're close friends on and off the pitch. And our connection, you know, runs deeper than obviously just football. You know, we grew up through the system together and we stay close contact with each other, you know, on a daily basis. So we reached out to each other and we basically just said, there's a lot going on here in Europe. We can only imagine what's going to, you know, eventually go on in America. And that's something that we obviously pay really close attention to. So we came together and found that Feeding America kind of is the broadest way to, you know, give money there and let them go to work and do what they do. So, you know, they specialize in feeding, you know, over or fueling over 60,000, you know, food banks and shelters and stuff like that. So, you know, in this time, obviously, the demand for food is going up. More and more people are going to need it. And obviously that's something that we're happy we could do, but you know, it's just a small thing. And you know, we want to reach out to people, use our platforms and just say, if anybody's able to help, then it's just going to be a growing thing.
Good man. Good man. Now I know you can't go out. Obviously there are certain limitations in how you can train. It must be very difficult as a footballer, especially in the situation you guys are at. To stay in shape, what is it that you're doing? What is it the team is doing? Are there any sorts of communications or way to stay in contact with the physio, stay ahead of this, or try to manage the situation?
Yeah, so, you know, since this started, we've been in close contact with it, whether it's our athletic trainers sending us running plans, our physios wondering if we need treatment, what they can do to help us and stay on top of injuries, rehab, all that kind of stuff. But we're still able to go to the training ground in small groups. I think it's groups of two or three. And we're still able to run and use the pitches to our individual ability. So obviously, you know, staying away from big groups, the whole social distancing idea and concept, that's still implicated around our training ground. But, you know, one of the biggest things for us is obviously maintaining that fitness because sooner than later, football will come back. And it's hard to believe right now at a time where everything is so hectic. But there's light at the end of the tunnel. And for us, it's just about maintaining that fitness.
Absolutely. And as I did more and more research of what is your career, and you're only 21 years old, I came away even more impressed. Now, I've already interviewed you before, the old Max and Herc podcast. We had a brief 15-minute conversation, shared a few laughs. But I come away impressed with your work and dedication and just maturity at such a young age. Tell me how that kind of comes about, because that just didn't happen overnight. I'm sure your mother, Melissa, was influential in this. Can you tell me, growing up, maybe what that was like in that environment?
Yeah, growing up, it wasn't the easiest of circumstances. I think that anyone that's grown up in a single-parent household, you go through the controversy of sometimes wanting a father figure or wanting a different type of guidance. You know, when you get mad at your mom, you can go pick your dad's brain. But for me, it was always just me and my mom for the longest time. And fortunately enough, she had the tools to kind of nurture me, push me outside of my comfort zone in certain situations, allow me to grow by myself, learn from my own experiences. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing that, you know, replicates what I do on the field and how my career has kind of gone. You know, I've just gone into everything with a fearless mentality. And, you know, if you fall down once, you get up twice. So that's kind of the mentality that I've grown on to go with.
Now, tell us briefly how you got exposed to the game, because I read about your 150-mile round-trip treks to go train. This was when you were at the Red Bull Academy, correct?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
So how was it initially you got exposed to this?
Yeah, so the Red Bull, you know, story is obviously a big part of my career. For me, it was, you know, at a young age, playing as many sports as I could. I played football, baseball, basketball, and soccer. So my mom pushed me to just do everything. And eventually it came down to the point where I did end up having to pick one. And to be fair, it wasn't an easy decision because I was really keen on playing basketball and I wanted to play basketball so bad. But I knew that soccer always just – it always felt right to me. And that whenever I was out on the field and being able to just run up and down the pitch nonstop, that always brought a big smile to my face. So, my friend, actually, a local friend, emailed my mom one time and basically just said, there's an RDS showcase program camp. Would Tyler be interested in going? And for my mom, she looked at the situation and she was like, yeah, it's a lot of money. You know, do we really want to do this right now? Is it the right step? And I was like, Mom, I think I can go. Like, I want to go to it. I'm really excited about it. My friends are going. Just let's do it. And she, you know, she was as tough as she played, she'd always find a way to make ends meet. And you know, that's the best thing about my mom, I think. And for me, whenever I had a smile on my face, I put a smile on her face. So yeah, we were able to participate in that camp. And then yeah.
So you're doing these 150-mile treks, you know, there and back, and this is consuming a large chunk of your time and resources, not only for you, but for your mom. I mean, if you think about it, she's giving up maybe things she wants to do. You're giving up other activities you want to do. You're really banking on this as a future at an early age.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you say it like that, you know, we were banking on it as a future, but at the same time, we weren't, because in my mom's head, I was always going to college, whether it was to play soccer, to study, and then figure out what would go on from there. But she knew that how much I enjoyed soccer and how much she invested in it was also her investment in me. So, I knew that every day that I was able to go out on the pitch, I would work hard because I wanted a future in that, whether my mom believed it or not.
You know, Tyler, there comes a day in, I think, every athlete or every person, I should say, in their dream or in their mind when – they're so close to their family and their family has sacrificed so much for them. They think, when I get to where I want to be, I want to splurge a little. This is what I'm going to get them. This is what I'm going to do. Has that moment come yet? Have you thought about what you're going to do, what that moment may be?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, of course, because for a lot of people, you know, their first instinct is to, yeah, go spend your money and go do that. One of the things that my parents, you know, tell me all the time is, my money is my money. Of course, I know that, but you know, it's theirs too. It was my dream, but they helped sacrifice me to get me to where I am. So, you know, luckily enough, yeah, I'm in a position that it's a good position to be in, of course. And I think any footballer would say that. And you know, one of the things is my mom always tells me is remember where you came from. And that's one of the things that, you know, with charities and doing that kind of stuff, I love to do it and give back to the people that need it the most. But yeah, for me, you know, I bought my mom a car before. I've just purchased a house and, you know, my mom's not working anymore. And, you know, all those things, it doesn't matter to me because she deserves that and so much more. But there's only so much that you can do, of course, in the position that you're in. As long as she's happy, I'm happy. And my whole family's very happy right now.
Good man. So you come to the New York Red Bull organization, I believe it was 2011. Is that when you came?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, so 2011, you were how old?
I joined the academy when I was 12. Yeah, 12 years old, I think, yeah.
Okay, so you get to the academy, you immediately start getting, I guess, the professional exposure, because when I was growing up, we didn't have these academies, we didn't have these, I guess, teams to really get exposed. I grew up in Vegas. The closest team was the LA Galaxy, so I had to drive 4 hours away if I wanted to catch a game or watch them train. Right. But when you see for the first time the players that are on this team, and I think around this time it was Thierry Henry, correct?
Yeah, Thierry Henry, Brad the Red Phillips, Tim Cahill, all of them, yeah.
So what's going through your mind when you finally get this professional exposure, when you're at the academy and you see the big dogs training at, you know, on the other side?
Yeah, so one of the coolest things for me growing up was that we had the opportunity with being in the academy to be ball boys for the first team games. Those games always came on Sundays or Saturdays, which was kind of our academy day off, quote unquote. So for my mom, it was kind of her day that was like, yeah, I mean, if we don't need to go down to it and it's not mandatory, then maybe we don't have to do it. But for me, it was the best day of the week to be able to go to a game, embrace the atmosphere, see what was going on, see what it would be like to play in Red Bull Arena. And, you know, I remember I convinced her to go to almost every single game. And those were the latest of nights because those games would start at 7, finish around 9, and we would get home at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. So being able to see that firsthand, I think that drove me to want to pursue the dream even more of becoming a professional.
Before I get into you becoming a professional, who was your favorite Red Bull player growing up?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a hard question. I always liked Peggy Luendola. I really liked, obviously, Dax and Bradley Wright Phillips. But Thierry Henry was my childhood role model. So, I mean, being able to watch him was the coolest thing ever.
I'm sure Dax and Bradley are going to love the shout out of you watching them when you were 11 years old.
That's going to make Brad feel old. I already know I'm going to get a text from him.
Absolutely. He's here in LA and I'm sure you're hear about it soon.
So you
signed a professional contract with the USL. This is back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then 4 months go by and the first team has an Open Cup game. Mm-hmm. The next day after this Open Cup game, there is, I believe it's a friendly against the reigning Premier League champions, Chelsea, of the EPL. You get the call up to this game. Jesse Marsh gives you a call. What's that call like?
Yeah, it was a unique one because at that point, I've already developed such a good relationship with Jesse. You know, I've sat down with him, my parents, and we kind of discussed the plan and what it would look like moving forward for me and going throughout my career if everything
goes
right.
How old are you when he discusses this plan of your professional ascension?
Yeah, probably, man, I was at residency at that point. They had preseason, so probably like 15. Yeah, right. It was probably 6 months before I signed or so. And we sat down and we talked about what it would look like. And he said that he would give me opportunity. So when this opportunity came, it was still a surprise to me. Like, it's not going to not be a surprise that you're playing against the Premier League team in any competition, whether it's a friendly or not. So, the first thing going through my head is we can't lose 7-0. First off, this is one of my brother's favorite teams. And I cannot let him have any dirt on me saying, oh yeah, remember when Hazard met you? Remember when this happened? And that's the last thing.
He said you were going to lose, what is it, 6-0, right?
Yeah. He told me we were going to get killed. And I, you know, we always talk about that still. We always laugh about it. But yeah, I mean, it was full of excitement for me. Being a 15, 16 year old kid, having the opportunity to play in such a big game, you know, it's going to be a packed stadium. Nerves were definitely in my body, but more excitement than anything.
Okay. So we get to the game. Chelsea goes off to an early lead. It may or may have not been offside. There is no VAR, so you can't review. It's 1-0. It looks like the same thing's going to happen to these Major League Soccer clubs anytime they play foreign opposition. And then all of a sudden, you guys pull one back. It's a defensive error by Chelsea. And then what happens in the second half? I mean, you're in a position that you normally aren't in. You're more of a defensive midfielder at this point, and you find yourself in the box. And walk me through the play.
I couldn't even tell you why I'm in the box to this day. Like, my parents, like, I talk about it with my parents, and like, you can't score a goal to save your life. Like, what were you doing in the box? And at that point for me, when I passed the ball wide or someone passed the ball wide, I was like, you know, why not? Like, why just make a run for it? Like, you know, these are the types of games where, you know, you can try anything and it's never going to feel stupid. You're not going to look back on the tape and say, why were you in the box, as long as I run back. So, you know, I ran in the box and, you know, it was a perfect cross. And I think it was Victor Castellanos who was on the USL team at the time. And yeah, and it met my head and it felt pretty good. I didn't think it was going to be a goal. I didn't really know what to do once it went in the back of the net because I'm not often in that position, but it felt really, really good. And it was obviously an exciting moment.
And of all things, it's a header. Did you ever dream your first goal was going to be a header and it was going to be against the reigning EPL champs, Chelsea?
Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, I talk about it with my brother all the time. I played middle school soccer and I was one of the only kids on the team to not score a goal. And then I go on to score against Chelsea and it's just like, yeah, I can't believe it. It was crazy.
All right, so I want to go back to Jesse Marsh because, listen, I've played against Jesse Marsh and he used to, in Los Angeles, the guys, when we were on vacation, back then the vacation was about maybe 3.5-4 months, he would organize these pickup games at the, what is now Dignity Health Sports Park, back then the Home Depot Center. And I always knew he was going to be a coach because during these pickup games, he would kind of organize the session and he would point guys at where they're supposed to be and he'd pull you aside and he'd have a talk with you. And I'm like, dude, we play on rival teams and this guy's giving me like pointers, you know, and he's already acting like he's my coach. You knew he was going to be a coach. He turned out to be a pretty damn good coach at that. But tell me just how influential Jesse's been, not only, I guess I'd say, in your upbringing as a professional, but maybe as a person as well.
Yeah, unbelievably. I mean, developing me as a player is one thing, but a person, a lot of the quality traits that I hold, how I feel that I was able to develop as quickly as I did, a lot of it came with quickly maturing under Jesse. For me, just the conversations he would have with me, pull me aside, what it was like to be a true professional at such a young age. Of course, a lot of it came from my upbringing, the people I was surrounded with in the locker room of our Red Bull teams, a lot of really, really good professionals and leaders. But the biggest thing for me was the leadership qualities he had. Like you said, pulling people aside, being able to communicate with people. I think that's why I'm able to not say I'm a leader, but have so many leadership qualities in me. You know, I just want to be the best leader I can be, make the people around me better, the players around me better, how I can influence things in high demand, high pressure situations. A lot of that came from Jesse, and I owe a great lot to him for that.
Does it surprise you he's been so successful with Salzburg? I mean, the Champions League success, how he took Liverpool to the brink, everything that's been going on. Does that surprise you at all?
No, not a surprise at all, because exactly how he treated me or any of the young players in the Red Bull system, it doesn't matter if you're a DP in MLS, a star in Europe, he's treating you exactly the same. And that's what's so great, is you don't feel the animosity between being a young player and old player. You're going to get treated the same. He's going to yell at you for the same exact details, get on you about the same things. And then the personal relationships to the side, those may vary about what you talk about. Obviously, he could never talk to me about having kids and doing things after practice and stuff like that. But he would ask me how school was today after I came from school to practice and talk about the little things. I remember after I went to prom, I walked into video the next day and there's a picture of me at prom on the screen. I was like, how did you even get that picture? So the little things like that can, you know, make you laugh. Pick up your mood, the positive energy. It's no surprise he's been as successful at Salzburg.
That's awesome about the prom picture. I'm sure Jesse has his ways.
Yeah, he does.
Now, when I think about Jesse and what you guys were able to accomplish together and how he was instrumental in bringing you to Leipzig, that transition with Jesse there, I'm sure made it just that much easier.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, having him here for my first 6 months, first off, it's very difficult, I think, to come in the winter, have a short preseason, and then jump right into a team. But he made it seamless for me, and it was very nice to have him here during that transition period. I would say that the hardest thing is obviously changing to the level of play of being here. I would say that the biggest benefit for me was not, you know, having anyone or anything like that. It was just being 100% fit coming from New York to here, being able to play for a full year. And of course, I think that a lot of that has to do with why I was injured for so long. But I think that at the end of the day, having him here, he was just able to teach me all the little nuances I needed to go, and I just hit the ground running.
Now, we're going to get into the Leipzig days in a second, but I want to stay with what is Major League Soccer and your ascension. And I've told you this before. The first time we met, you kind of gave me a f*** off. You know, and I was very, it stayed with me because I'm thinking this kid's 16, 17. I believe it was in Orlando when we were playing you guys in a preseason game when I was in Toronto, and it stayed with me. And I then retire after a year, I believe, and I'm working in TV, and I actually got a chance to call your game. It's the U.S. Open Cup final versus Kansas City. I got a chance to call that in Spanish for Deportes, and I remember how well you played this game. Your team played terrible, but you played very well. You were one of the few guys that showed up that day. And I remember after certain plays, you're urging your team to pick it up. You're yelling at the veterans. It's like when nobody wanted to take that mantle of a leader, it was you. And that stuck with me even more. And I asked you this a while ago, but I want you to repeat it. When you're that young and you're kind of ordering the veterans or showing more leadership in some of the veterans, how do the veterans take this?
Yeah, I think that, at that point in my career, I'm trying to think. I think I was still continuing to establish myself within that team so far that year. Obviously, that Kansas City game was a huge game. And for me, I'm a winner. Like, I just want to win, like, whatever it takes. So on the field, like, doesn't really matter who you are. I'm telling you, like, let's go, let's pick it up, do whatever we need to do, because I'm not really wanting to walk down and receive a medal at second place. So I think that a lot of them in that moment would say that we all held ourselves to very high standards. But for me, I'm going to hold everyone to the highest standard possible. So, yeah, sometimes they would look at me and be like, what the hell are you saying? Blah, blah, blah. And I'll tell them straight to your face, like, let's do this. Like, we need to win. Like, I don't care what hard feelings we have right now, what personal tension we'll have after this. It doesn't really matter as long as we win. So, yeah, I would say that was another thing that, you know, Jesse kind of instilled in us. I mean, as a young player, it doesn't really matter. If you're on the pitch, you're on the pitch for a reason. So, yeah.
But you can imagine maybe not everybody will take it the same way as a Jesse Marsh or as another player who just sees you as a colleague. I'm sure you must have had your run-ins with older players where they're like, oh, hold on a second, young kid.
Yeah, no, I had so many run-ins at training. In the beginning of my career, I would say that when I started to train, I would tackle everybody. I'd foul people. I would do anything, like, just to do whatever I could in practice to, like, say I had a good day of training or my team won in training. Yeah, I would do a lot of that, talk a lot of, you know what, and then just go on with the rest of my day. But for me, it was really important. Like, if you're a young player and you're wanting to break into a team, you have to have something about you. If you don't have personality, I feel it's really hard for you to make it. You can have all the quality in the world, but at the end of the day, you need to have personality in these big games and in these big moments, be able to grasp them. And for me, that was one of the things that kind of helped me be able to, in these big moments, whether it's getting on people, talking, communicating with people, that also calmed my nerves in the big moments, being able to communicate with people and do things. It takes your mind off of everything else that's going on for maybe that 1 second and allows you to focus again in another second.
You have a very old school mentality, and I say it with the utmost respect and admiration that it is, because that's almost lost upon players today. Do you feel, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but that maybe today the footballer is more interested in what they're wearing, what they're driving, things like that, than really this hard-nosed, get after it, win at all cost mentality?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, for me, again, I can emphasize it so much. That was a lot with my upbringing as well. Like, you know, I never had fancy things. I never had flashy things. I remember one time I was in a basketball game and my dad came up to me, and I was wearing a shooting sleeve for a basketball game, like trying to act cool and whatever. And he came up to me and he was like, you're never wearing that again. Like, you don't do that. Like, those kinds of things, like little things like that, that are like flashy, like with the jewelry or something like that. I remember when I was young, I always wanted like, just materialistic things, right? That was snapped out of me in about 30 minutes from my dad and my mom. They said, you're not buying that. You're not going to be another one of those stuck up players. Like, you worry about the important things. And that's kind of just the mentality that I've had because of those situations. You know, you experience things where, you know, every young player that makes a little bit of money is going to want to go spend it on something. You know, now I'm at a point where I don't spend any of my money and I value the things that are the most important to me.
Absolutely. And because of that, you've gone to where you were. Now, we accelerate a little bit, and a few months later after this Open Cup game, or I should say relatively later, you've represented the United States at the U15 level, the U17 level, the U20 level. You get your first call up to camp at the full national team level. Now, granted, it's after this disastrous World Cup qualifying campaign in 2018 where the U.S. lost to Trinidad and Tobago. It's the very first game in foreign soil. There's a very negative cloud, dark cloud hanging over the U.S. men's national team. I'm sure that doesn't matter to you at that moment. What's going through your mind when you receive this call-up?
Yeah, I would say that, of course, after the dissatisfaction of not qualifying for the World Cup, it's a huge moment in U.S. soccer's recycling year of now we need to figure out what's next. And obviously, there was a lot of uncertainty for a really long time during that time period. And for me, the biggest thing on my mind was I'm going in there, I'm showing everyone that I can play and what they're going to be excited about. So, you know, we have that game in Portugal, and as soon as I get that call, you know, I'm sitting there talking to my parents and it was like, there's no better opportunity for you. You go in there, you establish yourself now, and we focus on the next World Cup and all the things that are to come looking forward. And, you know, for me, I'm just a positive person. So looking forward and being excited about the next opportunity you have is what we have to focus on. Yeah.
is there a part of you just, I mean, it says, I wasn't part of that group. We weren't part of that group. Let's move on to the U.S. men's national team fans or maybe the press, because there does seem to be this negative vibe anytime the U.S. men's national team is mentioned.
Yeah, the realistic answer would be that it's going to be talked about until we qualify for the next World Cup. And that's kind of what you have to face. For me, it puts no pressure on me or anybody else, I think. I think that how you deal with it is you go out there, you play well, you qualify for the next World Cup. So, you know, World Cup qualifying can't come soon enough. I'm really excited about, you know, hopefully playing a pivotal part in getting the national team to the next World Cup.
So you go a full 90, you guys play well enough to tie in foreign soil. Let's move on to the 2018 CONCACAF Champions League, okay? Mm-hmm. This is probably as close as Major League Soccer has ever gotten because it wasn't just Toronto. The Red Bull, you guys also made a run.
Yeah.
You guys are playing against Chivas, and up until this point, I had never seen a mistake from you on the field. I've never seen something where I could say, that's on you. I'm sure there are plenty of mistakes, but a glaring mistake. And then there's a play where you're always so sure with the ball. You're one of these calm presence in the center of the park. You lose the ball. Isaac Brizuela plays the ball through. He finds himself on a 1v1, and he slots it home, and it's 1-0 Chivas. What's going through your mind at this moment where you're like, this one's on me?
Yeah, you put your hand up and you move on. I mean, that was just one of those situations that I felt like was a huge part for me in my career. I mean, there's two mistakes that always stand out to me, and it's that one against Chivas and the one against NYCFC when I tried to pass the ball to Aaron Long and they picked it off and scored. You know, you remember those things. Of course you remember them. But for me, it's only made me calmer in those situations now when I have to deal with them. You know what you have to do. Play it safe in certain situations, take risks in other certain situations. So it's just about being able to cut the tape. Learn from the situation, what players' movements are like, what you have to do in the situation, and then, you know, moving forward in even bigger games now, you know, you hope you don't make the same mistake again.
Obviously, it's a learning moment for any footballer, and I'm sure you're better for it. I mean, I can't believe you still remember the two mistakes, and I'll only say you've had two mistakes. It's crazy to me. Hopefully you have a long career and there are many more mistakes because that means you played a lot longer. Let's go into some moments that maybe are trials that test a player and really make them who they are today. You go to Germany. You have this big transfer to Leipzig. You're with Jesse Marsh now. You have sort of immediate success, a plane. You're fit. You start the first, I believe, 12 games, and you're doing very well. But then you get injured. Is this the first time in your career you've really been out for an extended period of time? What's the mindset, the mentality while you're off the field, especially in the biggest of scenarios?
Yeah, it's tough, right? And, you know, this has been by far the best development curve or learning curve you can possibly have as a player. So for me, I've never had an extended period of time that I've been injured. You know, you have things like, I remember I had a concussion or something like that. I've never really had muscle injuries, so it's hard to name. It's hard to name. And for me, you go through this time period where I would say that the hardest part of the injury that I've had was it was so stop and go. There was nobody that could come in and say, this is the amount of time you need. You're going to be 100% fit after this. Like if you hurt your calf or your hamstring, it's like 4 to 6 weeks, you're fit after that. Instead, it was like stop and go. So like 6 weeks out, wow, I feel great. I can play, guys. I play a game. It's the same thing again. It's a discomfort level to where you can't deal with. Like I've played through, of course, knacks and stuff like that where you have pain. You always play with pain. You know, I still play with pain. But it's a pain level that you can tolerate. You're fully fit. You're able to make movements that you naturally make. You're able to pass, shoot, do every single thing that you want. But for me, it was just so stop and go. And that was, I think, the most mentally demanding part of that.
So that season's over. You start again. You think you're straight. You think you're good. And then you pick up the same lingering injury. It comes back. Mm-hmm. What's this about now? What's going through your head? Like, here we go again?
Yeah, here we go again. I mean, the biggest thing was, okay, take time off and it's going to be fine. You know, you use the off season to rest, strengthen, do everything you need to do. You come back in the preseason. And to be fair, in preseason, I was fine at the end of the part was I started at the end of preseason. So it was right before the games were about to start and I was training and I was like, oh man, finally, it's just good to go. I got a full season in front of me. Yeah, I wish I thought a little bit wrong there. And you know, you come back, you're training hard, you're doing everything. And yeah, unfortunately it comes back and you have to deal with it again. And for me, it was never a matter of, oh yeah, you can just operate it. I'll make it better and make it better. For me, it was nothing comes up on the MRI. You should be okay. But obviously, you know, there's something there. And of course there's like a mental block at that point where you're like, am I good? I'm 50-50, like blah, blah, blah. And yeah, you move on. And yeah, now I'm where I am.
So you're finally fit. You're physically fit. And the Champions League game against Tottenham Hotspur is right around the corner. You end up finally playing a Champions League game. You're part of this effort. It's 4-0 on aggregate. You guys are going through. Explain the moment where you come onto the field and you realize you're playing in the Champions League.
Yeah, it was hard because it was one of those things where you waited so long for that moment to happen. Obviously, I think I missed, it would have been 7 Champions League games throughout the season. And you finally get in this one against Tottenham Hotspur, nonetheless, a Premier League team. Jose Mourinho, well, you can go down the list, right? And for me, just grasping that moment, it's still hard to do. You still don't understand the circumstances of what you just played and the type of game you just played in. But, you know, being out on that pitch, obviously I started off on the bench and hearing the anthem, but being on field level and being able to know I might come into this game and make an impact was one of the coolest things. And you know, obviously just being able to run up and down the pitch, have family in the stands, because that was right before the virus obviously started. It was just an amazing moment for me. Yeah.
Has this always been the plan? I know you're a type of person that sets goals and you want to aspire to be the best, but when you're growing up as a Red Bulls Academy product or just in your home with your brothers, are you thinking, I'm going to play the Champions League. I'm going to play in a World Cup. I'm going to be one of the best Americans to play. I want to be this. I want to be that. Is that going through your mind at an early age?
100%. And I think that for me, when you have role models like Thierry Henry, that kind of sets the stage for what it's like to be a great player. You know, there's obviously being a good player, but I want to be, you know, a great player. And I think that seeing that he's played in World Cups, he's played in Champions Leagues, he's played in the Premier League at the highest level, he's played in France at a young age and been able to go through the ranks in a similar way that I am. You take it step by step, and sometimes you have to slow yourself down, take it all in and live in the moment. But at the same time, it's so hard to live in the moment when you want to only achieve greatness. And I think that's kind of what my eyes are set on. It's always something a little bit more. How can I push myself to be that much better and just get better day by day?
Well, one of those ways of achieving greatness, especially for an American player, is becoming a champion in Europe. You guys are currently in third place in the Bundesliga. Julian Nagelsmann, your coach he's only 32 years old, which blows my mind. I couldn't imagine being a player and taking instruction from somebody so young. What has he done that's set you guys apart this season and put you in a position to compete for a title?
Yeah, his insight on the game is unbelievable. Tactically, I think he's on a different level than so many coaches. The way he breaks down the game and tries to figure out our tactics to give us advantages against the other teams is just unbelievable to me. You know, we sit in the video room and break down video, and the things that he says and how he says it, he's so convinced that all we have to do is make this little movement and we'll score a goal, you know, like those things. And you've seen this year, obviously I think we've added some key pieces in our team this year. But I think that you see these little nuances happening and how he's changed just things slightly and how it's given us little advantages in big moments. You know, the way that we're able to create and score goals is unbelievable. But I think that the biggest misconception is that, yeah, we score a lot of goals and we have great attacking pieces, but how we keep goals out of our net is even better. I mean, we have such a solid back four, defensive mids, attacking mids that are all willing to put in the work. And that comes with the way that we're playing. It's just an exciting way. The players are all buying into it. And that's something that obviously as a player you want. You want to be able to go to training and be like, yeah, I completely agree with everything the coach is saying and I'm excited to play that way.
Tell me if you agree with this. Is it true that he gives you the starting lineup 30 to 40 minutes before the game?
Yeah, that's crazy to me.
That's still insane.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's almost a really, really good idea in a sense, because, you know, if that works for you, you have guys that the day before training or 2 days before training, when you do 11v11, you always have the opposition team. You always have a starting 11. And when you're on that opposition team, you have a little relaxation. You're like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm not playing. We don't have that. We have completely mixed teams the day before the game, 2 days before the game. And it doesn't matter. You know, everyone's going after it in 11v11 saying, I don't know if I'm going to start because we don't get the starting lineup be, you know, 30 to 45 minutes before the game.
So he's found a way to keep you guys hungry and on your toes.
Exactly. And especially with these 3-game weeks where there's often not a lot of training, you have to find ways to keep guys hungry and energetic and have the ambition that I need to be in the lineup. I need to play week in, week out.
You know, one of those guys who's been just completely on fire is Timo Werner. He was my golden boot heading into the 2018 World Cup in Russia. That obviously did not happen, but he's been on an absolute tear. Can you please just, from an insider's perspective, because you see him train every day, you see everything about him, what sets him apart? What makes him so special? What makes him one of the most attractive targets in the world right now?
Yeah, it's hard to say one thing. You know, people are often focused on, obviously not just on his goal scoring ability, but how fast he is. He's absolutely rapid. But that's not one of the qualities that I would say sticks out the most. I'd say one of the qualities that sticks out the most is how many ways he's able to score from the right, the left, centrally. We've played him as a number 10 this year and he's running out of the midfield and scoring goals. There's just so many different dynamics that you can fit him in. And that's what makes him such a unique piece. I mean, if you're able to score in that many different ways, you're going to be able to play at the highest level for a really long time, the biggest clubs in the world, for the national team scoring goals. But he's a pleasure to play with. Obviously, it makes it easy as a midfielder when you can just hit the ball over the top and know that he's going to catch it no matter what. So, yeah, he's a great guy and a great player.
Where do you think he's best at? Do you think he's best at as a 9, off the 9, maybe as a winger? What do you think is his best position?
Yeah, it's interesting because we played a lot of 3-5-2 this year. So we usually have more of a target guy and he's one of those guys playing off of him. So, you know, when he drifts out to that left side, you have to be a little bit intimidated because the way he's able to run down the line, cut in and shoot is like, you know, you talk about like Arjen Robben, for instance, where you almost know what he's going to do. You don't know what Timo's going to do, but you know that once he cuts in, it's almost a goal every time.
And like Robin, it's like, you know, he's going to go to his left, but try stopping him from going to his left.
Exactly. He'll dribble all the way back to his goal, back around on his left, and then he'll still find a way to score.
All right. Let's move along to a little bit of U.S. Men's National Team talk. I actually was at the game in Nashville when you guys played Mexico, and it was a very, very strange feeling. I know you guys won and you guys got the result, but maybe that wasn't an indicator of how the game went. It was at times frustrating for you guys. Mm-hmm. But in typical and old school U.S. men's national team fashion, it was more about spirit, fight, grit, and finding a way to get a result. Walk me through what is your first U.S. men's national team goal.
Yeah, it was an interesting, and like you said, the vibe of the game from the beginning, when I, you know, how I mentally prepared for the game, for instance, was, you know, I got to be ready to battle, got to be able to win tackles, you know, win back the ball from our team in transition. Just the little things like that, just running through a playlist in my head of what's going to happen. You know, you kind of go into this game, you go into a couple tackles, but it's still not exactly what you expect. You know, there was at times this piece of energy that almost felt like it was missing in that game. And then all of a sudden they get the red card and the verge of the game just completely changed. The tracks of the game just completely changed. And I remember the ball being played out wide to Kellen Acosta and then Kellen Acosta to Anthony Robinson. And it was just another one of those things where, you know, I have always talked to my dad with this, and he always says this could be one of the strongest things in your game is at that 60th minute, players hit a point in that game where they start to get tired and I start to get energy. It's like the weirdest thing. So for me, you know, I just, you know, feel this burst of energy and I'm able to make a run into the box. And, you know, it was a good ball, a little bit poor defending from Mexico, I would say. And then I'm able to slot one home. And it was cool because obviously on 9/11, it was special. You know, I know a lot of people that were obviously involved in that incident. And it means a lot from me being from New York and whatnot. So it was cool. My parents were in the stands. I was able to wave to them. And yeah, it was good to get a good result against them.
And it's Mexico, which is always important for the U.S. men's national team fans. Absolutely. And if you want to establish yourself, I guess, as an icon, as a leader, as one of the big players in the pool, it's always a great scenario to hurt Mexico.
Exactly, 100%. And that's one of the biggest things is that was the first rivalry game for me in the national team jersey. So the feeling of that to be able to score and have a big impact. Again, like you said, you know, you want to be a leader in this team. You want to be able to show up in big games and be a pivotal part of the team. And that's what I started. I felt like I was able to do.
Tyler, what would it take for the U.S. men's national team to overtake Mexico as the top team in CONCACAF? Because obviously, it wasn't your era, but in the early 2000s leading up to about 2013, the U.S. men's national team had sort of a little dominance going over the Mexican national team, and they would win the World Cup cycles, and they would win Gold Cups, and they had favorable matchups and games against Mexico. And then all of a sudden, that kind of took a turn, and Mexico has proven to be probably the best team in this region and one of the better playing teams, I would say, in this hemisphere. What does the U.S. men's national team need to do to overtake them?
Yeah, I think that at times there's always going to be the misconception that the U.S. doesn't have enough quality to compete with Mexico. They go on the rant that we're not deep enough, and there's just a lot of things that always stick out to people. I mean, I'll be the first to say I always believe that we have enough quality. You know, you see, especially now, you know, you see the young players that are coming through. It's not going to be lack of experience anymore. You know, when you have players that are playing in the Champions League, when you have players that are playing at very strong MLS sides, like, you know, you have Aaron Long, of course, that's going to be a big part. You have Jordan Morris, Christian Roldan, a bunch of key pieces in their teams. That's not going to be an excuse anymore. It's going to come down to showing up in the games, doing everything it takes to win the game. You know, of course, at the end of the day, we're going to have tactics. You know, obviously Greg is very keen on the tactics, and every single player is buying into it now. But that's not always going to be enough in these types of games to overtake them. I would say that you need the grit, you need the competitiveness, you need the fire in your stomach before the game that says, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to absolutely clatter somebody. And that's the thing, the mentality that we need moving forward to be able to compete against the biggest teams and the best teams. And at the end of the day, Mexico is a top team. You see the quality that they produce and that they have, and we have to be able to go out there and compete with them.
That used to be a staple for the U.S. men's national team. In my era, we didn't have maybe the pool that we have today. And trust me, I just had this interview. I had an interview like this with DeMarcus Beasley, and we're both the same age group. We're 37 years old, 1982 age group, which is the first residency program in Bradenton. But we talked to ourselves about how kids today are so much better. There's so much exposure at their at their fingertips, the resources, the coaching, the sports science. You know, technically they're better. Just all these things going for them, but maybe the mentality is lost. Why do you think that mentality has been missing?
It's hard to say, right? You know, and I can't speak for your guys' age group and what happened there, but one thing that you can say is a lot is given at a young age to a lot of kids, I would say. You know, you have obviously the luxury of going into an MLS academy, you know, having the great facilities, having things that are right in front of your eyes where, you know, sometimes it gets lost that it's more of a luxury and a lot of fun, which it should be fun. Of course, you need to enjoy playing the sport. But you lose the, what do I have to work to get to the next stage? Instead, it's, you know, I walk through the U14 to U16 to U18, and then, oh, now I get to see what happens. You know, and in a lot of other places, you have to start figuring out what happens when you're, you know, U13. You know, from 11 to 13, some of these kids are like, this is all I have. So now I have to work for it. And for me, you know, I was one of those kids. That was something that I really wanted. So at 11 to 13, I was like, I'm going to buckle down and I'm just going to invest everything I have in this. And that's what my family did as well. So I was lucky with that.
I'm sure you get to expose to this more now that you're playing in Europe and you're playing at a club like Leipzig, and you see all types of players, whether it's the first team or second team, you see that struggle and you see how they're forced to confront their realities and almost make it work if they're going to survive.
Yeah, 100%. And being at such a big club as Leipzig, you know, we have our first team gym on one side, and how they've designed the places that the academy gym and whatnot is on the other side. So anytime we're working out, the kids are watching us and seeing what we're doing so that they can say, you know, those are the shoes I want to be in. I want to be on the other side of things. And, you know, when you have academy kids come and train with you, they work out in our gym and stuff like that, and they get to see what it's like. Then when they go out on the pitch, they see what it's like, how hard it is, how demanding the sessions are. And that's what I think has to happen. You have to be able to put in front of, you know, young kids what it's like to be in the first team shoes. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, you get to come walk around at my hip and see everything that I get to do. But it's, you know, the tough days, the good days, they have to have that experience in their head that say, you know, I have to work for this, but I have to also be able to work through these difficulties as well.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go back to the tactics that you were talking about with Greg Berhalter. And this maybe doesn't even go to Greg Berhalter. This is just in general. We've seen you play so many positions as a defensive midfielder, as an eight, as a right back. Where does Tyler Adams feel most comfortable?
Yeah, I get this question often. Six for me. I mean, it's where I'm able to have the biggest presence. I think it's where my qualities are. I'm able to use my qualities, I should say, being able to break up plays, start plays, you know, calm down the game when it needs to be calmed down. It's just where I'm able to go out there, have the energy that I need, have the structure that I need, the responsibility of being in there. And like I said, I feel like I'm able to be a leader through that position. You see the field, you're able to demand players, get on them for things. And that's where I feel like I have the biggest influence for sure.
I hear you talk about leadership so much, and I'm forward. You're 21 years old. We're talking about the U.S. men's national team, and you're talking about leadership. You obviously see yourself as a leader. Do you want to be that leader in years to come? And my question is, 10 years from now, Tyler Adams, when we look back at his U.S. men's national career, in a perfect world, what is that like for you?
Wow, that's a tough question. 10 years from now, looking back, that would be playing in this World Cup. That'd almost be playing in three World Cups. Then, to be able to be a World Cup veteran would be obviously the first thing. Being successful in the World Cups is a different thing. Obviously you look at the next World Cup as a huge platform for us to go out and get experience for the young players. But I think that, of course, being the 2026 World Cup, when it's going to come back to America, US and Canada and Mexico, That's a huge platform for us as well. I think you're obviously a key age with your experience. Your development. I mean, how cool would it be to bring one home in the U.S.? But, you know, continuing to develop. And like you said, yeah, being a leader. I think that also entails being the captain. I think that, you know, I would never shy away from doing that.
And that's what I was going at. You want to be the captain.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. I think that the responsibility that it takes to go out there, get a group of guys to all be on the same page and be able to develop myself as a leader and also the people around me. I feel like I've had leaders, I've had captains that have been able to nourish me, and I feel like I understand the responsibility of what it takes.
Now, you touched on 2026, and I've been saying this for quite some time. If the U.S. men's national team ever had a chance of winning a World Cup, if they ever had a chance of making a deep run, it's 2026. I mean, you look at the pool today. I know many people are negative. There's a very negative vibe when it comes to the pool and the U.S. men's national team, but look at the amount of European players. Look at the amount of first-team players that play all around the world at a very young age. And in that tournament, I believe you will be 27 years old, prime age. Mm-hmm. A lot of you guys, we're talking about Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams yourself, in that midfield with the Gio Reyna maybe on the wing. When you think about the prospect, I mean, when you run it through your head, is it a realistic possibility for you?
100%. I mean, I don't go into things thinking that I'm not going to win it, put it that way. So for me, you know, you of course, when you get to a World Cup scenario, I think everything goes game by game. That's the only way you can look at things. If you look too far ahead, I think that's when you lose grasp of the things in front of you. So, but for me, I think that we go into that World Cup, and you were naming some of the players, and you know, you have guys with like Josh Sargent, that will have experience. Gio Reyna, who's going to be an unbelievable prospect and has only the world in front of him right now. Sergino Dest, who's only going to get better and better. You know, you have players that are playing at big time clubs, playing Champions League, and are going to be able to compete with anyone. If you're competing in Champions League for one of the top teams in Europe, you're going to be able to compete in a World Cup. And I think that, you know, the more and more players that you have that are able to do such a thing, I mean, it's a realistic thing in my eyes for sure.
You just brought something up that's very interesting, because I did a segment maybe a month ago on Gio Reyna, and they're like, is he ready for the national team? And I said, gee, let me guess, is he ready for CONCACAF and he's competing in Champions League? Why do people think that you can, that they're exclusive? You can only be ready for Champions League, but oh, CONCACAF is a different beast.
I mean, it is crazy to me, because I did actually see that piece, and in my eyes, it's not based off of age. It can't be based off of age. It's based off of getting your best players into the pool as quickly as possible, getting them experience, and they're only going to be better by 2026. There's not going to be something that comes out that says, oh, he played at 6 or 17 in the national team, but that harnessed his development for 2026 World Cup. It's only going to make him better. It's only going to give him more experiences playing at that kind of level. I mean, the kid is making it look seamless, you know, receiving the ball in tight space against PSG. I'm sure he's going to be able to receive a ball from one of our players against, you know, a top national team.
What is it about Gio Reyna that makes him so exciting for you?
Yeah, I think that his ease with the ball. He's a player that personally for me, you know, you have players like Christian, you have players like Weston, and then you have players like Gio who are just, they make everything look easy. Those are the players that you just enjoy playing with, because you can give him the ball in tough spots. You know he's going to deal with it. You know he's going to make things happen. And there's just a confidence to him, a calm confidence. He just goes about his business. Is not bothered by anything. He's getting touched. He's getting fouled. He's playing through things. I mean, those are the players I like to play with for sure.
Now, I'm going to give you, we want to build our perfect U.S. Men's National Team player with you, Tyler, okay? So this is Tyler Adams' perfect U.S. Men's National Team player, okay? So I'm going to give you certain things that this player has to be the best at. First one, his right foot. Who's got the, and this could be a current player or an ex-player in the U.S. Men's National Team pool, okay?
Oh, God. Yeah.
The best right foot.
Oh, man. Best right foot. Yeah, Dempsey, maybe.
Clint Dempsey. I'd have to be in agreement. Let's see. Best left foot.
Oh, gosh. I'm not going to be good with this. Now I got to think of lefties.
You've got Eddie Lewis. You've got Jeff Agus. You've got Carlos Bocanegra. You got DeMarcus Beasley.
John Brooks. Calm left foot.
John Brooks. All right. There we go. Yeah. Best game IQ.
Best game like what?
IQ.
Oh, best game IQ. Best game IQ.
You could put yourself in any of these, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know. Michael Bradley's got to be up there for sure.
Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
Speed,
Christian. Pulisic.
Christian Pulisic.
Yeah.
Okay. Over Jordan Morris?
Ooh, Jordan's fast, but Christian is different. He's quick and fast. I think people forget about that.
Explain that to people, please. Explain what the difference is.
Quickness is over 5-10 yards off the dribble, just rapid. Like, you know, when he gets the ball in tight spaces, the way he's able to accelerate out of them is like different level. And then, yeah, his speed is just different. Over, you know, 40 yards, he's able to maintain it at one speed.
Mentality.
Oh, mentality. I was always a big Bocanegra fan. Yeah, probably Carlos Bocanegra.
Look at Losk in the shadow. Carlos Bocanegra. Okay. Great defender in his time. Technical ability.
Technical ability. Yeah, it's tough. Christian's got to be up there again.
Wow, Christian Pulisic with another shout out. Yeah. All right, and last one, trash talking ability.
Either myself or Weston.
Weston's a good trash talker.
Weston's not bad. Weston. Oh no. Sorry, scratch both of those. Matt Miazga. That guy is the worst.
No.
Matt. I completely forgot about Matt. I was going to say myself or Weston. We do talk a lot of trash, but Matt talks – he's on a different level.
Right, and this is in reference to Diego Linus and that running he had in Nashville with
them. There's so much more than that, but, yeah, we'll let that one be the forefront of it.
Actually, I do know what you're talking about, because we played against you guys. It was the Red Bulls, and when I was in Toronto, one of my first games in Toronto – with Toronto, I should say, and he started mouthing off to Michael Bradley. Of all people.
Yeah.
You can imagine how that went.
He's crazy. Matt's crazy. I'll give that one to him for sure.
This is your – okay, so let's go. It's right foot, you got Dempsey. Left foot, you've got John Brooks. Game IQ, you got Michael Bradley. Speed, you have Christian. Mentality, you have
– Bocanegra.
Bocanegra, correct. Technical ability, again, Christian Pulisic. And in trash talk, Matt Miazga. That is the perfect U.S. men's national team player. Yeah. Listen, my man, it's been fun. I've had a lot of fun with you. I wish you nothing but the best in hopefully what is this next – let's get one really quickly. This Champions League, it's not over. It's not over. At some point, it's going to resume. Exactly. What's going on? What's the mentality? What do you see going ahead of yourselves?
Yeah, no. We're really, really excited. It's tough to say because obviously you want to see the draw and what's going to happen next, but obviously that next round of games hasn't quite happened yet. But we're excited. We always talk about it around the team. And I think if we had a realistic draw, we wouldn't want to play a Bundesliga team. We'd want to play another team and have the experience and just be able to grow. But it's really exciting times. Yeah.
Just pure experience. What team would you want to face next?
Ooh, to play next. I don't know. That's a hard question. I don't know. We've talked about PSG. Playing Real Madrid would be great. Honestly, it doesn't really matter. Like, we're not going to look at it and say it's a favorable draw. I think that you look at it and you say, yeah, whoever we get in the next round, we're just going to go after it.
Let me pick your brain really quick. Let's say it's Atletico Madrid, and yep. It's that brand of football, and yep. It's so tight and compact. You're a very cerebral player. How do you see yourself penetrating those lines and hurting a team like Atletico?
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. And I'm just imagining that we'd be playing with five in the back. I think that, you know, playing as a midfielder with five in the back, a lot of what we like to do without giving too much away, is having those outside backs be able to make darting runs diagonally and just add players that are able to make runs, but without making it too congested. So a lot of what we do is let them have the ball maybe a little bit more, see what they like to do, and being able to counter press the way that we do, is kind of a lot of how we create counterattack situations.
My man, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. I wish you nothing but the best, and I'm sure we'll see each other down the road.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.